out. Get ready for the nerd out. Better put specs on. Better break next song. I caught handsome checks for my expansion sets. They call me.
What's going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined again by my brother, Boof.
What is up, everybody? You know what it's time for?
Another episode of Crafting Comics
with the Bearded and Boof.
So,
are you over here? Are you over here?
You're over here. It's so weird because, like, what I look at. So we're talking. We got another great episode. We got our beers. We got our comics. So, Boof, why don't you tell our viewers what are we talking about today?
Well, we're gonna do Fantastic Firsts. I mean, you want to launch a new series in the comic biz? You got to hook everybody with issue number one. And you know, in the '90s, might have been a hologram. Might have been a 64-page intro, but that was the 90s. We're past those gimmicks mostly. You know, throughout the history of comics, you got to have more than a solid story. You have to have something engaging. You have to have sick art. The cover's got to be there. It's got to draw you in, much like the beer can. And then, of course, the big firsts in beer. You know, we're talking about in our area, you know, what were those big first breweries that really – hit our respective areas in Ohio and Massachusetts, you know, what's still around? What are we still drinking today? And I believe we've both had a couple of selections from those big breweries that we still love.
Absolutely. So we've got our beer. We've got our topic of comics. So, hey, let's talk comics.
I can feel your anger. It gives you focus.
All right. So I'll introduce my beer first today. So this comes from something I've shared with you guys before. This is a BrewDog. This is what I call the Elvis juice. That's not what I call it. It's what they call it, but I'll call it that too. So I've mentioned it actually last time I talked about BrewDog. They did a Sonic Temple beer. So this is probably their second beer, I think, that kind of made them popular. But it has kind of surpassed and is taken as this is what their footprint has been in the city of Columbus. They're known for Elvis juice. If a bar has BrewDog on tap, guarantee you they're going to have Elvis juice. They released a Punk IPA, which is a good IPA. It's just your basic IPA. But this Elvis juice is a grapefruit infused IPA. And we talked about where it's not a juice bomb. It gets the right notes. But this is what I think has put them on the map here in Columbus, Ohio. Like I said, you go to a bar, you go to a restaurant, if they have BrewDog on tap, guarantee you it's at least an Elvis juice. So this is their first, I would say it's their first that just put them on the map in Ohio here. And it's tasty. It's good. So I'm going to crack this open and pour it. So while I do that, Boof, why don't you tell us what you're drinking today?
Well, actually, I got a question for you. I mean,
yeah, go for it.
Elvis juice being everywhere, is that the beer in Ohio that people are after? You know, all the beer traders, like they're looking to hook up with someone in Ohio. They want a pack of Elvis juice to try that out.
Yes and no. BrewDog is they chose Columbus because of basically within 6 hours you have so many metropolitans. Mm-hmm. So their distribution is actually pretty good. We actually had a friend from our comic collective down in Atlanta picked up some BrewDog. And it was Elvis juice is what was on the shelf. So it's not as hard to find.
Okay.
Because it's such a popular beverage of theirs. So it is putting them onto the map. So if BrewDog gets into the Boston area, the first thing you're going to see is Elvis juice.
Guaranteed. Awesome.
That'll be the first one. So, so it's not a big trade beer just because you can get it pretty accessible here in Columbus. So
that's cool though. Something that Fantastic is accessible and that you don't want to be chasing that white whale all the time.
Right. And which is nice. So it's fantastic. So.
Well, speaking of the Boston area, I got one of the big guns from Trillium.
Ooh.
Brewed in the Four Point area originally. Okay. Small little, like no taste test. You can fill your growlers and get out the door. Then they started bottling. This is the beer that put them on the map. They did a self-titled Saison. They did a couple of sours, some wild ales, very small operation. But Fort Point, their aggressively hopped pale ale. Now, this being the double dry hop version, is what put them on the map. It drinks like an IPA,
okay,
but not a juice bomb. I love a good earthy, bitter, piney IPA, and this pale hits all those marks for me. It's fantastic. There's a reason they do so many variations on it, because it's just that good, and people want a little bit of a spin on such a classic beer. And the pine just smacks me in the nose. Just I'm gonna inhale it. It's
oh yeah, I got it. So we've got two beers that are kind of the same genre, but completely different routes. So yours is a more piney, mine's a more fruit based. But I think I like both those styles because they're both, they get you the flavor that what you need. And I think it's fantastic. So.
And because of the popularity of these, drawing the crowds, drawing the income, then our favorite breweries can start doing more of what we like.
Exactly. And they can, and they expand, and they do so much, and it's great. So we've got our beer, we've got our craft. And you said in the intro, we're talking comics. We're talking comics that they catch you right off the bat, because we are inundated with this culture now where there are so many comics to choose from. You're watching videos, what to read, what to pick up. You got to know. And so, honestly, I think most issues for me have one, two chances. If I'm not hooked by issue two, it's kind of like... which is tough. And so it's a tough. So we're talking, what are some of those first issues that catch it and get you excited about more issues? So we've got some new, we've got some older, not super old. So we got a good mix, I think.
Absolutely. One where you pretty much unanimous on, I brought it to your attention that I devoured this at like 2:30 a.m. on a weeknight because I couldn't sleep. Once in Future from Boom Studios.
Yes, Karen Gillan is killing the game with this. It's a
wow,
beautiful story. And what we're gonna, I think what we're gonna try and do on these is because we can go down the rabbit hole of a lot of these stories of how great they are. We're gonna focus in on those first issues though. We're gonna kind of keep with that storyline a little bit of what drew us in that first issue. And so I guess like I was familiar with Once in Future. It was kind of on your radar here lately, and that's, you just read into it and you're like, oh, can we, I was like, yes, let's put this on our list. So what did you like about it? Let's get that ball rolling. Like, what was that hook for you? Issue one,
the reinvention of that Sir Arthur mythos, the old sword and sorcery in modern day. I love a spin on it. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's not a reboot because it's, you know, it's public domain and, you know, anyone can do that. Kieran Gillen is an amazing writer. He's touched some of my favorite characters, huge run on Thor back in the day you know, maybe 10 years ago, but still
back in the day.
Awesome what he does. And, you know, the art is fantastic. Dan Mora, it reminds me a lot of Ryan Ottley, who I'm a huge fan of on Amazing Spider-Man and Invincible. And the colors, I can't remember the colorist's name. The colors are fantastic when you warp between like the fairy realm and you know, the sunset scenes. But you know, the real hook, yeah, there's a charming, bumbling lead hero, but you know, who did it for me? Nan.
Tell me it's Grandma.
Nan, absolutely Nan.
It's Grandma.
She's a badass Nan, Grandma, British Grandma, that has a huge weapons cache in the middle of the woods. And there's a Gatling gun with stakes in it that she's not going to use anymore because she's killed all the vampires.
Right. Yeah, he's like, what is this for? She's like, oh, it's for a vampire. He's like, oh, we don't need that anymore. I took care of that. Okay. Okay. So that's where we're going. You're right. And what I think was so captivating about this story is, you say King Arthur, you've heard the story. How many times have they tried to reboot the movies? You've seen all those movies, and that story has been told so many times. But what they do is they say, okay, let's take this take of something that a property that most people love and is near and dear to their hearts. Cause what kids didn't grow up playing as knights, right? Trying to save the damsel in distress and the castle from dragons and all, you know, whatever, right? Like, you've heard the Knights of the Round Table, all this stuff. And they're like, how can we take a twist? And I mean, what they integrate is And if you go in blind, you're like, where are we going with this story? And it, what I like about it is I feel like a lot of first issues, they get you, they're like, okay, it kind of builds. And then it's that last panel that catches you where you're like, oh, absolutely, I got to know. Once in future, it kind of builds like in the first like four pages, and then it gets jumped right into the twist, kind of the plot twist. Like, you don't wait till the end to find out that, you know, grandma's just BA, right? Like, you find out middle of the issue, and she's running game then on, you know, the monster that jumps in, and it catches you right off the bat. And then they still have that last page hook, right? With like, oh, maybe King Arthur's not the good person that we're so used to.
Absolutely.
But I like it because I feel like it catches you early on. It's characters that you can invest in and that you're enthralled with. You're like, okay, I'm here for this story. I'm on this ride. I'm ready for it. And man, grandma though is just,
she's fantastic. She's fantastic throughout the series.
Yes.
And it's not just her, it's her interaction with the other characters too, because she's not terribly nice, even to her family, which is awesome. She's kind of a dick.
And this is the first issue, so if you guys haven't read some of these, there's going to be a little bit of spoilers. But I mean, her son's like, all right, this is too crazy. Her grandson, I'm like, I'm done with this. Like, this is, she's like, no, get in the car. She points a gun at him. Like, he's like, you raise me. You're not going to shoot me. And she grazes his ear. She's like, no,
he
I will.
Shot him in the
like,
ear.
Absolutely. She's like, no, like, listen here, son, you're going to do what I tell you.
And then when they, you know, they find the weapons cache, and I was intrigued, but the book didn't have me until the quest beast shows up. Like, okay, there's monsters, there's magic. That's absolutely my taste in comics.
And she's like, go distract it, run, so that way I can take care of some stuff. Like, she doesn't mess around. So yeah, it's a great read. I mean, I know it's on a lot of people's top reads list right now. It's hot. We talked about like how many first print, you know, how many
eight printings of issue number one. I've never heard that happen.
Not, I don't think this early in the game either. Like, I mean, granted, it's a smaller distributor, so that, you know, a publisher, so they probably started a smaller count than.
Right.
Anyways, but I mean, it picked up steam right off the bat, and it's kept it though. Like, I mean, I'm here for this ride, and I think a lot of people like you and I are.
And absolutely,
it's great about that. So,
and I love that I can, like, I dove into the trade. I waited until that was available, so at least I can binge it. You know, I have plenty of other things to read, so when volume two's out, I can just boom right in there. And I told you, it's the first trade that I thought about. I kept it in my library takeout stash because I'm probably going to reread it. It's that good.
It's fantastic. So. Talking about Once in Future, I think that leads us right into our next book that I know I've read. You have not gotten the chance to read yet.
No, I've been looking forward to hearing your take on this. Tell me about it.
So, Join the Future. Now, so this book dropped, I think it dropped end of February, early March. So, right before COVID stuff.
Okay, so
brand new. So, there literally is one issue out there. Like, they have not, and it has been one of the most frustrating things ever, because I read the first issue and it is one of those that I flew through it, but not in a bad way. It was that I couldn't, it felt like I was like, that's it, I'm done. Like, where's the next issue? Like, I wanted more. So what Join the Future, I talked about it on an episode before of some of my favorite pickups. And I'm bringing it in for this first issue because it's so good. And it, what Join the Future talks about is, it's kind of, it's set in this dystopian world. So, you know, your usual, and it opens up the first like couple panels is this kind of ad advertisement for this. Hey, come to this utopia that we have, everything you need, food, you know, perfect homes, you know, elegant lifestyle. All you have to do is just come live with us. Well, and it's kind of like, okay, why not? And there's this band of, I don't even want to say rebels, but kind of people are like, this seems suspect. We don't trust this organization, we don't trust this society that they built. And so they kind of are, and I say dystopian future, I'm not talking like Mad Max, I'm talking you have this like beautiful bubble universe, right, that they've created, And then it almost feels like the Old West a little bit. So maybe like ranch, not like, you know, like ranch houses out in the woods, like log cabins. So not like, you know, Old West as in like gunfights, but as in kind of just a more, it's
rustic,
rural, you know, not as, and
it's not the Jetsons future. Yes. Utopia.
Right. And so you have these distinctive people who are like, we kind of have made our own little, you know, OK Corral kind of town where we're just, you know, this is our pocket of people. We don't have technology. We don't have iPods and things like that. This is our pocket. And you see this interaction between the people who are there in this utopia and these people are like, hey, you guys got to come. And the dad, who's kind of like this rebel leader, he has a son and a daughter, and they're kind of trying to figure out their roles of like, is this, you know, is technology bad? Would this not be a better life for us, kind of dealing with this? And so, you know, there's some backstory that I can't wait to get into. And I'm just like, what? And right off the bat, there's fight between those kind of both realms, both worlds there of societies. And some stuff goes down and you're like, okay, I need to see what happens next. Like where, because it comes off as like this utopia is like, they're fake. Like there's something behind the scenes that you're like, okay, it doesn't add up. And I'm hooked. And so I'm hyping this book up for something that is literally one issue of print. Like, I don't know any other part of the story. It could take a nosedive here, but I think it was the most prime example of something that I read one issue of. I have no other basis. There's no other inkling of anything else coming in. I'm like, no, this has me hooked. Like, I can't wait for it.
Nice.
So
who publishes it? Like, who writes it? Who draws
it? It's pull it right here. It's from Aftershock.
Oh, nice.
Zach Kaplan is the creator behind it. And so show you that cover.
I've seen that.
Yep. So it's just a, you know, she's, you know, kind of the Old West person looking into this kind of utopia. And it's just really well written. Art is drawn really well. And so I think Aftershock does some really cool titles. And so I'm excited to see where they go with this, what, you know, kind of spawns off of that.
Very cool.
So we've hit once in future. We've talked join the future. I think it's time to go a little blast to a lot of our past.
Mm-hmm.
Back to some childhood nostalgia. What are we talking about next, Boof?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Number one,
Ninja.
From Mirage. Not the Archie series, not the campy TV show that, you know, we all love. This is black and white, 40 pages of violent action, like graphic fighting. The Turtles, many people don't know. One, they all have red headbands, you know,
right.
The informed fan does, but the casual fan does not. And they killed people. They killed lots of people. Yes, albeit bad guys, but they also got hurt. You know, you see the Turtles getting sliced up. Leo gets sliced up by Shredder and, you know, just cuts them right across the belly when they're fighting in this book. Like, it is, you get an origin of the Turtles and Splinter. You get Shredder's origin. You get a fight against the Foot Clan and a fight against the Shredder, all in the entire first issue, which is probably one of the most sought after independent comics ever, I'd say.
Oh,
highly valued. Absolutely.
So many people I know that are trying to get it. I would love to own a copy of that. And it's, you're right. I feel like so many of us grew up with Turtles of, like you said, the animated series, the movies, the Archie comics that kind of spawned the Playmate toys. And this,
which are awesome.
Which are great. But I've never seen a franchise take a complete 180 like Turtles did, of where they took a property, like you said, that is, that first issue, rereading it is super great. And we're all rereading like reprints. Don't think either Boof or I are like these.
Right. Yeah.
This like is all cracking good. Open a first printing of Turtles and rereading it for you guys. Like, wait a second. You guys should not be reading those again. They should be nice on your shelf. A, we can't afford a first printing. And B, we're reading the reprint. So, but it is. And what I found interesting rereading, I don't know if you, I actually rewatched Turtles 1 and 2, the movies from the 90s recently.
There is a lot from the first film that draws on that first issue.
And which made me, when I was thinking of, like we said, if you know Turtles, you know it's that first issue, the early series that Eastman and Laird did is super violent. And I think we have the nostalgia glasses on where we're like, yeah, well, I remember the kids' live action movie. Like, and I rewatched it, and I'm like, it's pretty graphic as well for a kids' movie. I'm like, Mom, Dad, what were you guys thinking? Like, because the rooftop fight at the end is almost identical in the comics to the to the movie. And looking back at that, it's super violent. But it's, you know, it's movie magic where they make it casual violence. Like, oh, Shredder falls into a garbage truck and Casey Jones is just like, oh, oops, I'll hit the lever and kill a person. And parents are like, oh, no worries, that's fine.
It's cool. Jim Henson said it was fine to crush him.
Right. And, you know, and it's crazy because it was so violent, and which is why you had an April change into the next movie because she thought the first was too violent. And so I find it interesting rereading. I thought there would be more of a disconnect between the movie and that first issue, but it felt very similar to its roots, which I'm surprised that they got away with that, you know. But it is. It was a great first read. It's a great – talk about an origin story, like you said.
Absolutely. It's detailed. Like, they hit on everything. And you know what else I love? I love the appearance of the Turtles. It's, you know, that was their original appearance. Like, so many characters, they evolve over time. But that's the turtle look that I like. NECA made some really awesome, like, early Turtles replica action figures that I've had my eye on for years. That they're just fantastic. And apparently there's some pretty cheap imitations floating around, which I might have to settle for, but I like those. I don't like the ovular head, you know, kind of cartoon ones. Like, those original, like, badass beak-like turtles are what I lean towards.
I mean, I lean towards the Playmates because that's what I grew up with.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. But after I discovered that, it's just, they're different turtles.
Yeah, and those live-action replica turtles that they're doing, like, I'm not talking, like, when they released the movie and they had, like, the skin spots on them, like, lined up with them. I'm talking like the re-release that they did of some of these, I think it's NECA and stuff. They're beautiful.
Oh yeah, they're like this big,
and they're a thing of beauty. So, and I mean, talk about, well, and we'll talk about a couple other series here that the first issue, I mean, that is Once in Future, Join the Future. We don't know what they're so fresh, we don't know if they're gonna spawn these worlds, but I mean, talk about Turtles is a first issue that launched a franchise for generations. Like, you can't go somewhere without someone knowing.
I have friends with young kids, you know, 10, 11 years old, that they watched the Nickelodeon show. Heck, I started watching it with my daughters.
Right.
I had to stop because they were saying some of the language in the show, which I realize is not really ideal for pre-K. So we took a break from that. But we'll join right up again soon.
We'll get there. So, yeah, I mean, so great, great. So we've talked Once in Future. We've talked Join the Future. We've talked Turtles. Now, this next one is one that I'm excited about because I feel like this is a character that gets overlooked a lot, gets kind of pooped on a little bit. And that's what I love about this issue. And we're talking Aquaman, New 52, Issue 1 by Jeff Johns.
And Rice. That art, oh man.
Like,
that's what hooked me in. That cover, you know, I think we've talked about it. I'm a huge fan of the Peter David run from the 90s.
Yep.
And that's the whole reason that I grabbed this issue, because I was looking for another Aquaman like that. And after what Jeff Johns did previously on The Flash and Green Lantern, I had to jump into this. And man, I was not disappointed.
Well, and I think
perfectly. What did this issue do for Aquaman?
It took him from being a footnote. It took him from being the butt of the joke, I think, of the Justice League, which is crazy to me, because even if you read, and I've been picking up some Silver Age Aquaman, like, it wasn't like that in the book. I think everyone's interpretations though of Aquaman were from that 1960s animated series.
Super Friends.
Yep. Super Friends, where Aquaman's just riding on, like, jet skiing on, water skiing on dolphins and seahorses. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're like, okay, this guy's, he talks to fish. He's a joke. And Aquaman is probably one of the most overlooked characters because of that. And he comes off as a joke. And what I think was so brilliant, what Geoff Johns does here, is he sets the stage up. He takes the history of Aquaman, of people's interpretations of Aquaman, and he says, okay, I get it. And you see that right off the bat. Like, Aquaman comes in and saves on land. He saves some stuff going down, and the police are like, what are you doing here? There's no...
Yeah, the middle of the city.
You're like, are you okay? Do you need a glass of water? Like, can you breathe? And Aquaman's just like, y'all stop clowning. Like, what are you... Mm-hmm. And then he goes into a seafood restaurant diner that was special to him because of his dad.
Yep.
And people are all freaking out. They're like, oh my goodness, this guy who's best buddies with all these fish and talks to fish is at a seafood restaurant. Like, this is weird. And then he orders the fish and chips and people have a conniption. They're like, what? And it talks, and even, I think even in the panel, it talks about Saturday Night Live. It even mentioned Saturday Night Live. It talks about how, and so what Geoff Johns is saying, okay, I hear what everyone has said about Aquaman in the past. This is not what you're going to get. So he addresses it all in the first issue. He lays the foundation to say, no, you're going to get the Aquaman that has been there in the past. You just aren't aware of it because you have your blinders on of what pop culture society has said. And he goes, and I'm going to make a pretty hardcore Aquaman out of that. And I love it.
And then after he finishes chatting with the police and getting his fish and chips, what, he just jumps out of sight, like almost as if he's flying. People are like, what?
Yeah. I mean, his powers, what he
almost
has,
as strong as Superman. People don't know that.
And he addresses, he's like, I don't talk to the fish. He's like, they're too dumb. He goes, basically, they're too dumb. He goes, I just have the powers that I can manipulate them to do my will. Like, which is like, that sounds a lot cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I can talk to a jellyfish.
And it opens up such a fantastic story arc. I stopped reading kind of like almost right after Johns gave up. I think Ivan Reis jumped off. Paul Pelletier jumped on the art, which was really solid. But I think after the long dead king, like around issue 25, 26, I stopped reading, but that was a heck of a run, and I really enjoyed all the way up to there.
And that first issue, too, is where you get the first appearance of the trench.
Oh, that's right. I forgot, because the second issue, they get the cover, and
yes,
it's
they get
the face cover.
But you actually, I want to say almost like the first panel or two, like the first page or second page, the trench is right off there. Like, and so, again, it's, which is, there's talks that there's going to be a trench movie, and you saw the trench in the Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And I think it just was a really cool adaptation that Geoff Johns is like, this is, I'm going to give you a proper introduction to what, if you, like I said, if you read past Aquaman comics, you knew what Aquaman could do. You knew that he was a dope superhero. Like, there's a reason he was a part of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're only familiar with Super Friends or Robot Chicken's interpretations of Aquaman, you're like, this guy's a clown. And I think what was really cool to see Geoff Johns just say, no, hey, this is a real character that has some depth that should be taken more seriously. And I was grateful to see that. So so Once in Future, Join the Future, Turtles, Aquaman. Oh my goodness. Boof. The next book. You just got exposed to this again, too.
Something is killing the children. Ooh. Literally read issues 1 through 3 this morning because my library, apparently this book is so hot, they can only let people check out so many copies of it digitally every day. And the library had reached its limit after we spoke yesterday, and I couldn't read it last night. So as soon as I got up this morning, I downloaded issue 1, boom, got through it, 2, 3, and then I had to go to work. It's, man, I have really gotten into horror comics in the past, I'd say 5 years. This hooked me right away. The crazy premise, James Tynion is a fantastic writer. He does such unique takes on all the properties he touches. Loved his work on Detective Comics, that, you know, that Batman team.
Yep.
This is completely different from that.
Completely, you know, different. And he's brought in onto, he took over Tom King's run, and so now he's on the main Batman run. And which is crazy, because like he's got Batman and Something's Killing the Children, and they're both ongoing series that are fantastic. But
the quick, you get a lot of quick hits.
Yes.
You don't get any really character development. You don't even find out Erica Slaughter until, you don't find out who she is until the second issue. You know,
right, she comes in like what, the last three pages or something of the first issue.
And you see her, coming out of the woods. She's in one full page in a few panels, all bloody with that crazy mask, which I think it's a variant of number one, is just like that mask variant.
Awesome variant, yeah.
That's crazy. And then you see her.
She's on the bus to go to, she gets a phone call. She's on the bus to go to the town.
Yep.
And you see her meeting up with the kid
who
got to experience. And the kid looks very much like James Tynion, in my opinion.
You know who I thought he looked like? The kid from that Vertigo series, Books of Magic, like the kid that was like before Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I thought he was drawn exactly like him, like glasses, hair, and everything looking really spot on.
What we talked about this, what captivated me with this issue, and what's, again, right off the bat, it leaves it at the end, but like the end isn't a big hook, like at the end, like there's no like, hey, I got to read because of it. You're like, okay, yes, I see where this is going, and I'm excited for that. They hook you in like right after the first three pages, where you see the slaughter,
the sleepover there,
and
all of a sudden he wakes up in the police station
because the kids are playing truth or dare. If you've not read Something's Killing the Children and you don't want to go in with any spoilers, stop this video.
Walk away right now.
But shame on you for not reading Something's Killing the Children. But I mean, the idea is, you'll catch on, and we're not really spoiling too much for you anyways, because if the title's called Something's Killing the Children, guess what? The children die.
Right, and this thing is brutal.
It's brutal.
Look, like there's children's intestines everywhere.
Right.
It's really, like, it's unnerving almost. Like, this is, you're looking for a good scare, you know, read this alone. Read it with the lights off. Don't let your children read it.
No, it is not for your kids at all. But it's this idea of, okay, you see the monster in the first issue still. You get a glimpse of what it is, which I appreciated. They don't leave you hanging. The mystery revolves around the characters more, that you get it, like Erica Slaughter, like what is going on with her? Because you see her in this issue coming out of woods, like she just took care of a monster from a different town, and she's on the phone with someone, like, what's going on?
Can we pause it for a minute?
Yeah.
What kind of phone is she on?
Flip phone.
I asked the bearded bro, what's the time period that this is set in? Is this set in, like, you know, 98 or you know, 2002? Maybe the monsters can track smartphones, you know, maybe. Either way, Erica Slaughter, badass enough.
Yeah, I was telling you, I don't remember. I've read deeper into the series than the three issues, and I don't remember because I reread issue one as I knew we were talking about, but I hadn't had a chance to. I mean, I don't think they've had a new issue. I've read a new issue in 3 months because of everything going on with quarantine and stuff. So what's cool, though, is I think as we were talking, this started out as, I think the plan originally was a 5-issue series, a mini. And I'm a really big fan of minis. Like, I think you get in, get to tell the story and be done, and which is really cool. But they kind of said, hey, we've created a world that there's so much more to unpack here. And so it got shifted to an ongoing series. So I'm excited to see where they keep going with this. So
absolutely. Speaks to the quality of the creative team too.
And I think what was really cool, and I think this will tie in right into our next book. You talked about the kid who's crawling with the intestines, and it really reminded me, that scene of the kid reminded me of the scene of issue one of one of the biggest booms in comic history, which has got a lot of people back in the comic books. We're talking Walking Dead.
Absolutely.
And there's a scene where a girl who is with her bicycle, who's kind of half, and I got that same image, right? Like that. Yeah. And so, yeah, so we moving from Something's Killing the Children to now Walking Dead, which if you have lived under a rock, you don't know what Walking Dead is, but why did you put Walking Dead on the list for you?
I remember hearing about it long before the TV show was even an idea. I heard these people talking about it. And I'm like, okay. And I saw it on the shelf at the comic store, but it was already in issue, I don't know, like 30 or 40 something, which back then thinking, man, if I picked up a couple of those, like even those 30s and 40s can fetch several dollars now. Mm-hmm. But I was perusing eBay, as I often do when I want to get into a series and buy a big chunk of it. I got the first four trades. I devoured them. Like, I rocketed through those trades, and then I just continued buying the trades until I reached the end of the series. It did not stop. It was, you know, I'm a sucker for an apocalyptic world, but this especially, you know, you see Rick Grimes and Shane and they're cops and there's the shootout and he gets wounded and all of a sudden he wakes up and then, you know, it's just how it plays out in the show. Hospital's vacant. He hears moaning, you know, don't enter, dead inside. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's zombies, walkers, you know, they never use the word zombie in the entire series coming out of this room. And Tony Moore's art is just fantastic. It's a shame whatever happened between him and Kirkman, because his art would have really, I think, elevated the series. Not that Charlie Allard's was bad. It's just different.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm glad about what Walking Dead did for me was it made me appreciate a comic without color.
Okay, I can see that.
Because I feel like, and I feel like this is true for movies. Like, if you're flipping through, you see a movie in black and white, you're like, it's old school. I don't want to watch it. Turtles, you're like, yeah, there's no color. Walking Dead, I have never been just enthralled with the series as much as Walking Dead. And rereading that first issue, again, people, I have a reprint. I have like a Wizard World Comic Con issue that you can pick, or a comic store like reprint when they were doing those. So I'm reading the reprints, okay? Don't be like, oh, you're reading. Yep.
Mine was Image First's edition for a dollar.
Right. But what it does is it brings you into the world. And I think not having color actually helps the story a little bit in the comic for me, because it allows me to focus in on the drawing of what's going on and to really focus in on the storyline. And for me to be hooked in with that first issue, like you said, you know, he wakes up at the hospital and then he's out and he's like, what is going on? Then gets bashed over the head with a shovel by the kid. Because he's like, Dad, we got one. And they go to the police station. You're just like, okay, this is cool. But I think what really hooked me in at the end was as he left the hospital, what I talked about at the beginning, the scene where you see the girl with the bicycle who she's like half, you know, eaten alive. And she's laying there. It reminded me of the kid from Something's Killing the Children. He leaves her, he takes her bicycle, goes, and, you know, and then at the end of the story, that first issue, it ends with him going back and putting a bullet in her head. Mm-hmm. And what it showed me was, okay, there's going to be depth to these characters here.
Absolutely.
Like, in that first issue, that first 26 pages, you see that there's going to be this struggle with Rick Grimes' inner turmoil of, what do I do? These are people who were people. They're not. And you could see that he had that sense of like, man, she's just there. I've got to put her out of her misery kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really cool catch for me, because it wasn't like this wasn't the end of the story where it was like a hook of like, you know, you see like his kid is a zombie and he's got like, or something like that. It was just like, I think it shows you like, okay, hey, here's a character who's going to have heart and struggle, and it's going to be more in depth than just a, you know, like, oh, let's kill them and run over some.
Especially because they establish immediately that people are unaware of zombies. You know, there's no such thing as zombie films in this movie. The dead right. don't rise, you know, things like that. That's why it's so foreign and he's so taken aback by what's happened. You know, he has no idea how to cope with what's going on. He just knows how, right now, he knows how to be a cop and he's going to look for his family.
Yeah. And great series. And I know the comic just wrapped up last year or early this year. I forget what ended, but which was a shock to everyone because I think
they were out of nowhere.
I think they were going to ride that gravy train for a while, people thought. And then it just was like, boom. And it was like at a weird number, like 197, like three away from like issue 200. And they're like, nah, like this is so props to them for being able to do what they do. And, but, so last book on our list, you brought this to the table. For all you guys sitting there going like, hey, you've talked indie books, you've talked DC books. Don't think we forgot about you, Marvel fans. Booth came through last minute. What did you bring up for our last book of fantastic number ones?
Ultimate Spider-Man number one. Now, I am a huge Spider-Man fan. Spider-Man is my favorite comic character of all time. You know, Peter Parker's relatable. You know, I was a nerd when I was a kid. He is too. You know, puts on the costume, saves the day. Yes, we all know the shtick, but Ultimate Spider-Man is different. You know, you go back to that 60s series with Stan Lee and Ditko, he's not in school very often. He doesn't have these interactions. You know, Flash Thompson calls him a weenie and, you know, he does his homework and, you know, all of a sudden he's in the costume. You don't see the kid in high school. You don't see what he has to deal with. And, you know, yeah, I remember what high school was like. You know, there were ups and downs. High school is a different place these days. This is set in, I believe, the early 2000s, I remember, because I picked up the first couple of issues in New Zealand, funny enough, when I was abroad, because I had seen it in ads, and I remember, okay, I got to jump on this.
Out, I think it came out in the early 2000s, so I don't know if that winds up with your New Zealand timeline.
And it does, and actually, it was released around the same time as that Kevin Smith Green Arrow, too.
Yeah, okay.
And, man, what a read for someone who considers himself so knowledgeable on Spider-Man and the character. You know, I had been collecting since I was probably 7 years old, The Amazing Spider-Man. I was wowed. I was blown away because the character development was so engaging. You don't see Spider-Man in costume until like issue 5. You just see Peter Parker, the high school loser, his aunt and his uncle, his classmates. He gets bitten by the spider. And then we had been talking about, you know, those hooks. This is one of those examples. That last page is the hook. And I believe, was this the first time that you had read it?
So you, I enjoy Spider-Man. I grew up on the animated series. Spider-Man has, second to Batman, one of the best rogue galleries.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's Batman and then Spider-Man's rogue gallery. That's hands down. And they have the best animated series, Batman and Spider-Man. Like, I mean, so like, I'm very familiar, but I had not picked up Ultimate because this was right at the time for me would have been probably about high school where I was kind of phasing out of comics for a little bit just because there was so much other stuff going on. And so I had not read Ultimate Spider-Man. You put it on the list. I said, all right, I got to read this. And I will tell you what, it was so fun going into this because I had no idea what this was, the story was going to be about. And as it's, when it started, I kind of was annoyed at you because I was like, really, Boof, you got me reading another stinking origin story of Spider-Man. I've seen all 18,000 origin stories on the film. I've read the comics and I'm like, are you kidding me? Okay, he's going to get bit. But
that spider is huge, by the way. That spider is like as big as his hand.
It is. And reading it, I about halfway through, I go, okay. And it was a realization when, for me, when, again, if you haven't read it, it came out in 2000.
Right.
Read it. We're spoiling it. So if you don't want to spoilers, go. But when there's that interaction with Osborne, and I always had my last name's Osborne, so I've always had that correlation with Oscorp, and you know, I feel like connected, kindred spirits, you know. But when there was that interaction where it almost is like, and again, I have only read issue one, so don't spoil anything else because I'm going to read more. But for me, I'm reading, I'm like, okay, it seems to me in this origin story that Norman Osborn's going to know, because he's already like, he's like, he kind of was like, oh, Peter got bit by a spider in our facility. Cool. Let's keep him alive because I want to watch him. And then he sends someone to kill him because of they're like, and Peter does Spider-Man things and flips over the car and sees a gun. And so like, for me, I'm like, okay, so we're going to get a story where Norman Osborn knows or has an idea who Peter Parker is, and possibly then who Spider-Man. I don't know. I'm excited because I'm like, it seems like, it almost seems like an Elseworld story. Cause I don't know if, cause it can't be in continuation cause it's a different origin story. Right. But it seems like one of those Elseworld stories. And as we've talked about those before, I'm here for those all the time. So
absolutely, me too.
The art was great. Yeah. And that last panel where he's hanging on the ceiling as Peter
wakes up, and all of a sudden he realizes he's got the powers, and he's got that big smile on his face.
And, you know, and I know Uncle Ben's going to get it here real soon. So I got to keep reading, find out what their word iteration is. And,
mm-hmm. And this is hip modern Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben has a ponytail. He is a hip dude. This is an early 2000s Spider-Man. This is not 1963 Spider-Man. And you don't get any webs. You don't get any super strength. There's no secret identity. He's not even Spider-Man yet. And it's still an amazing first issue because of the characters.
And the character development was so well done. And also, I think what's just as so great is it's just a fresh take. I think when someone can come into a story, and this was, correct me if I'm wrong, this is Bendis and Bagley, right?
Like, absolutely.
Which is a great creative team. So when I saw them on the list, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be here for this series. But when you can take a character and do a fresh take without it seeming hokey.
Mm-hmm. Or recycled.
Right, like, When a creator can, it's the same thing. I think Batman and Spider-Man are parallels into the comic community because they're completely different characters, but they're both like the, how many Batman origin stories have you seen retold? How many Spider-Mans have you seen retold? How many spinoffs and characters? You've got the Batman Who Laughs. You've got 18 different Robins. You've got Spider-Man 2099. All right, like you've got all the, you know, you've got Miles Morales. You've got Spider-Verse. So they are taken what they're doing, but this was, it was like, hey, we're gonna go back to the roots of Peter Parker and Spider-Man, but tell an interesting story different from what you are, but not different enough that you're gonna be like, that's not my Spider-Man. Right. I think that's what was the beauty of the story for me. I think it's very easy to take a story and go, I'm gonna flip it on its, you know, head. And I think Bendis does a really good job of saying, okay, I'm going to keep what you love about Spider-Man, but I'm going to tell it in a fresh way. And I thought it was great. So I'm
hooked. Because he's still a kid too. That's the fascinating part. He's a kid who can, you know, lift a dump truck over his head now. And that's where the fun comes in with exploring that. And it gets better once, you know, obviously he knows he can do some stuff now. Bendis has a lot of fun with it. It's action packed. But it's also funny because he weaves in the high school drama a la, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming, like a John Hughes film. It's cool like that.
And I think that's what's the beauty of it is it, you see Peter Parker is it more in the high school side of what he has to deal with as a, and what would you, how would you go about? And you even see the dialogue with Uncle Ben and Aunt May is like, oh, we don't want to sue them anyways because his son's, Norman's son is one of Peter's like kind of only friends. Like they even acknowledge like they're not friends, but they're kind of friends.
Right.
So, well, he's their only one. He's the only one that's kind of nice to him. So we can't sue them because we don't want to take that one, some close inkling away, which is like, talk about that. Like for a kid going through high school and stuff like
that's like a real thing. Parents probably have to deal with now.
Yes. And I think it's, I think it's a really good take of like, okay, you have people who understand what possibly kids are going through in the midst of, because it's not always easy. And I think right. It was just really well done. So I'm excited to, it's on my list now to read more on. So
awesome. Well, you got like 150 issues to get through.
Great. So yeah, it's going to be farther down on my list then. So,
and Bagley drew all of them.
Ooh, I'm excited. I'm here for it. So
awesome.
That was our list, gang. We talked Once in Future. Karen Gillan, check it out if you haven't. We talked Join the Future. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Aquaman, Something's Killing the Children, Walking Dead, and then, of course, Ultimate Spider-Man.
That's a solid list. That's an engaging list of first issues.
And I mean, there are so many first issues I think that we could have pulled from. There's a lot of great first issues that miniseries has spawned. We talked about throwing in Batman New 52 in there with the Court of Owls. I almost suggested Deceased because that was.
I was really, really impressed with that series. I thought it was going to be another Marvel Zombies, and it was not. It looked right away.
There's Stealth was on my list to maybe check out, which is another one of those, like, Join the Future, which is just one issue in, and I'm really hooked into it. So there's a lot. So as you guys are watching this video, let us know what you think about some of the series we talked about. But what are some of your, in the comments, leave them below, what are some of your favorite first issues? Like, and try to look at it from that first issue. I know it's hard to do sometimes because we have all this content.
Don't look ahead. Don't look at the bigger arc. Like, what's gonna hook us with issue number one?
And let us know in the comments what you guys think. Because we, as much as we love to, we do these shows because we love reading comics. And so, as you guys comment, I think we've done some where some of you guys have commented like, hey, your Crushable series, have you guys read this? And we were like, oh, we're putting this on our list now. So as much as we're doing this to inform and talk about our love for comics, we also are like, we want you guys to share with what are some of your guys' picks. So make sure you guys click that like, click the subscribe. Get all the notifications of when stuff drops. But mostly, man, comment on this video. Let us know what you think. Find us on Instagram, Bearded Comic Bro, and
I am Boof.
Okay, easy breezy. Let us know, comment on our posts, talk to us about comics. What did we miss? What are some that you're like, how did this not make your list? We'd love to talk with you guys. If you guys got some suggestions or things that you want us to talk about on the next episode of Crafting Comics, let us know as well. We're here as always. So
if you have some suggestions what you'd like us to drink, please send us those things to drink.
Because we're always looking for that as well. So I'm
absolutely
in. Well, with that, gang, we are getting close to 45 minutes to an hour. Who knows? I don't know. We're talking.
It has no relevance anymore.
It's comics. Who cares, right? If you're with us this long, cheers to you. So I hopefully you guys can find some time to curl up, grab a book this weekend, and nerd out. Peace.